Well, what's good? It's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Lamborghini Petey, episode 29 of the Respect the Game podcast, the Alondo Tucker episode.
Ooh,
hit play on that. I'm here with my boy Abe Schwadron, as usual. Abe, what's good, bro?
Yep, aka Abraham Lincoln Bio, back again.
Yo, I kind of like that. Now we just got our like set AKAs
standard.
Way
man.
Better than like panicking 3 minutes before every one of these. Being, oh,
yo,
shit.
You got an AKA?
Nah, never. And of course, well, not of course, but thankfully, we got our boy Franklin Kaye in the cut.
AKA, I was given a 24-hour notice this time.
As opposed to what? The 2-minute notice? The 2-minute warning?
30 seconds.
My man is looking real luxurious sitting over here. The limbs super relaxed, very cozy in the cut. Very happy to have Frank in here today. Frank and I did an interview with a few people from Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Yume Ramos, the president of the National Basketball Federation of Puerto Rico, and Fernando Quiñones, the president of the BSN, which is the league down in Puerto Rico. So we'll get to that a little later.
Yeah, how was that?
It was it happened. No, it was cool. You'll hear me stumbling through some Spanish later on, but no, they were cool. They came just to talk about, you know, the future of Puerto Rican basketball. And then JJ Barea stopped by, which we had last week, which was very cool. But no, before we get into that, you know, NBA is going on, but collectively, the three of us have seen like quite a bit of college basketball in the last week or two. So we figured we'd get to that. Last night, Abe went to see Northwestern Texas, his alum,
yes,
at Barclays. So Abe, why don't you just, you know, give us a little play by play of what happened at Barclays Center last night?
Yeah, man. So it was the Legends Classic. You know, obviously a 4-team little mini preseason tournament. Actually, Pete, you and I went last year. All three of us went last year, to the same exact event because LSU was playing and we wanted to check out Ben Simmons.
And Henry Ellenson
was there as well, playing for Marquette. So it's a cool little event. You know, it's not super well attended because it's so specific to the fan bases of the four teams that play in the Legends Classic. But, you know, it's one of these many preseason mini tournaments that happen in and around New York at MSG, at Barclays. Northwestern beat the shit out of Texas last night, which was nice for me to see.
Shout out my boy Trap Horn.
it's Tap Horn.
Nah,
but
it's Trap Horn.
Yeah, man, I was really pleasantly surprised just to see the way the Northwestern played. You know, not necessarily a team that's on anybody's radar, considering the Wildcats have never made the NCAA tournament ever. But yeah, it was fun for me. I mean, I was a little surprised that Texas didn't look as good as I thought. I mean, that's a top 25 team that basically got smoked by a Northwestern team that's not known for smoking non-conference big-time opponents like that.
What's good with Shaka Smart, man?
You know what was interesting is they didn't really go to sort of the Havoc full-court press defense until the game was almost all the way out of reach, which I was a little surprised by.
Yeah, I was listening on the broadcast last night. Apparently, they just like don't have any type of good point guard at the moment, so pretty big issue.
And it was interesting, you know, we were talking a little bit before the game. I was like, yo, you know, should I look out for anyone on Texas? And you said Jared Allen, right?
Yeah,
and
Jared Allen. I
didn't even notice Jared Allen for the entire first half of the game. Had I not been looking, I would have thought he was like the 8th best player on the court, which is very interesting. And maybe that all ties back to the guard play, which is something that we talked about a year ago with Ben Simmons and like the way that he was not being able to get the ball because of the guard play on his team.
Right.
Which is that's like a theme among all college basketball, right?
What, bad guards?
No, just if you don't have guards that can lead the way, that can set up your talented big guys, sometimes those super talented big guys don't really shine in college the way that they should.
Well, to that point, Frankie and I last week went to the Garden to see the Champions Classic, and we saw some actually really good guard play.
Okay.
Well, not so much Michigan State. Although, what was my man's name on Michigan State? Who's pretty good? You were saying the whole time, you're like, I like this kid.
Oh, Cassius.
Cassius. But we saw Michigan State play Kentucky in the first game, and then the second game we saw Duke and Kansas, which came down to the wire. I mean, for me personally, like, yeah, the games were, well, the first game wasn't so great. The second game was really good. But more than anything, I just like people watching events like those. Like, the Garden was packed. Carmel, like, Melo sitting courtside. Mm-hmm. John Wall snuck in and was sitting behind the Kentucky bench.
Stuck around for Duke game, too.
Stuck around for the Duke game. Larry Brown was sitting in the stands. Like, it's just funny, you know, walking around. And it's great going with Frankie, too, because he's so in tune with all these kids when they're in high school. So he's like, yo, that's so-and-so's brother talking to so-and-so from high-ranking so-and-so. But, you know, we're not going to get into too many specifics. So it's just funny, like, to see all the family members there. So it's a really cool moment for the kids. But, I mean, Kentucky is the number one team in the nation right now. So, Frankie, why don't you just – you know, you cover De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk. Anybody else I'm missing on that team that you covered pretty extensively?
Bam Adebayo.
So yeah. You covered a lot of these kids pretty closely in high school. So why don't you just, you know, give us a little breakdown on what you saw at the Garden and what you expect from Kentucky.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, the weird part about it is that, you know, like, coming in, Malik Monk was always known as this explosive guard that takes it to the rim. And people were always seeing if he can get that jump shot, like, to be consistent, you know, not streaky, he could, you know, talk his way into the top, probably top five, top seven conversation. And I think he had, like, what, 6 or 7 3-pointers that night? I mean,
he was lights out.
He was lights out, exactly. Yeah. And so to do it in that kind of environment, we don't, I mean, we saw NBA scouts were there, obviously, and, you know, agents and everybody was there. And so to do it in that environment at the Garden, you know, on ESPN primetime, I think it was, a big, big, big moment for him. So I think Malik has, at this point, you know, emerged as the top player for Kentucky. Although we would say, we were talking about this too, like, Briscoe is probably the most improved player in college basketball at this point. He's, you know, choosing his shots carefully, being very efficient with his, you know, in terms of, you know, what he takes and what he doesn't take. Not as erratic on his way to the rim anymore. He looks like the smartest guy out there on the court.
You know? That's Isaiah Briscoe, who's sophomore at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. He's impressive, man. Like, it's crazy. He can play, like, one through. He played the four a little bit. Pardon me, I got a cold, so I'm just trying not to cough into the mic.
Fight through, bro. Yeah. Fight through.
But they ran him through, like, a lot of screens. They were really, you know, focused on getting him the ball and letting him make decisions.
Isn't it crazy how, like, being a sophomore, you almost immediately, now it's like you're getting overlooked in terms of the hype and stuff. Like, college basketball, now if you stay past 1 year, you almost, there's, like, a strange... Not that you're, like, forgotten, because, you know, you can still be a good player, and experienced teams typically do very well in the tournament and stuff, but it's a kind of strange thing, right?
It's funny because, like, you know, when Harrison Twins came back for a second year, the whole question was, like, how engaged are they going to be with the team? Like, mentally, are they going to be able to sort of, like, understand, you know, what they need to do? And can – I'm pretty sure they were shocked in terms of, like, they didn't see the stock go the way they thought it was going to go freshman year. So it was very interesting to see that, you know, where was Briscoe going to go from here, you know, mentally. De'Aaron Fox coming in, you know, 5-star point guard. Malik Monk, stop, you know, 5-star shooting guard. You know, you got Bam Adebayo, 5-star, you know, big man down low. So to see him, nonetheless, like,
the love for Wenyan?
Wenyan Gabriel, you know, Lady Mergen, 5-star prospect. Yeah, for sure. So to see him, like, nonetheless, come in and, like, be able to, like, mentally understand what his role is, you know, leadership wise, in terms of being vocal. It's pretty impressive. I mean, it speaks a lot, not just basketball-wise, maturity-wise, you know, mentally, the fact that he's able to come in and say, you know, I know what my role is and how I got to do it. So, I mean, you know, we all, you know, sort of sneak in there and try to peek in at what the mock drafts are looking like. And so it'll be very interesting to see what happens with him. Because, like, you know, the only thing I can sort of, you know, compare it to is when the Harrison Twins came back for the sophomore year. You know, the stock didn't really, it didn't move needle. It didn't change much.
They went to the finals that year, right? Final. Lost to UConn.
Four, or was it? Yeah, yeah. At least one or four. Yeah,
it's
the
final game.
Yeah, no, I think Briscoe's going to put up really impressive stat line
cough
for the year.
In here
I know.
Today.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I chugged the Tussin right before I got on the air, but it's not doing enough for me right now. But yeah, for as far as Michigan State, I had them top 10 to start in the college preview, but I'm not feeling good about that. Outside of Miles Bridges, I don't know what they got. So you can never really count out Tom Izzo, what he can do with the team. But, you know, Bridges obviously can fly around the court. He's got a lot of work to do in the post, I think.
Of course. I mean, they had him running point, too. That was pretty interesting. They had him bringing the ball up the floor in the second half.
He's by far their best player. And as a freshman, like, Michigan State is kind of known for getting guys, you know, to stay through their junior and senior year and being important pieces through the tournament. I mean, you look at, like, Denzel Valentine last year as the most recent example. So, I don't know. I mean, putting it all on Miles Bridges might be kind of a might be a sign of not great things to come. But we'll see what happens in Big Ten. When was the last time Northwestern beat Michigan State in basketball?
Dude, it happened when I was in college.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, man.
3 years ago?
Running up and down the dorm hallway, man.
Really?
Yeah, man. On the road, too. I think we did it at home, actually, pretty recently as well. All but, right. Yo, another team I wanted to point out, and admittedly I haven't even watched one full game of them play, but I watched a little bit of the Villanova-UCF game.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about
that, man. I wanted to see Taco Fall, who's, if you don't know who that is, he's got to be one of the most interesting players in all of college basketball, like most watchable players. He's 7'6", and it's just like a strange thing, as you can imagine, like seeing him play basketball. But then to see him play against Nova was even crazier because they're so good and so polished, share the ball so well. Like, they're super watchable basketball team, like almost pro level, like the way that they move the ball, at least offensively. I was super, super impressed.
Yeah, I wanted to get into them too. And as you said, super polished, like.
Like, just the style of play. Not to say that they, you know, I don't want to, I just want to back up that statement. Like, I'm not saying that they're a pro team in the way that people are like, oh, Kentucky could beat the Sixers. Nothing like that. I'm just saying, like, the system they run, it looks very, it's very clean, which you don't see a lot in college ball.
Not as, definitely not as talented as Kentucky, but, like you said, every time somebody catches the ball, like, the first thing they do is, like, get a triple threat and ball fake every single person every time.
And they
time.
Move the ball so well.
And, like, it almost 10, always...
12 passes on a possession.
Always ends up in an open shot. The only thing... The only problem I see with them is I really personally underestimated how big of a vacancy would be in the middle now that Omar Spellman has been suspended. Right. Like, they're super small up front, so they're going to play a lot of small lineups, but... You know, they play tough and they play hard and, you know, they play the right way. So, you know, the Big East is going to be better this year. I think Creighton has looked great to start the season.
Yeah. Beat Wisconsin, right?
Yeah. And I think they're going to be – I think they're 12 now and will probably be top 10 after this weekend if they – whatever. I forget what tournament they're in, but they should win that. Like, Xavier has looked great to start the season.
Wait, yo, speaking of the rankings, this bothers me every single year, but the coaches poll is such a joke. Like, we were just talking, you know, Creighton, you just mentioned, Creighton beat Wisconsin. Somehow in the coaches poll, Wisconsin, who has, I think, multiple losses, is rated ahead of Creighton.
Well, that's the
what
thing.
What is the coaches poll? What are we still doing the coaches poll for?
That's the thing. Like, do you think John Calipari has watched, like, a single St. Mary's game?
No.
To start the season? It makes no sense, man. No sense.
I just thought that needed to be pointed out, at least briefly, that's just... was strange to me and compared the two polls, so whatever.
But Frankie, before we move on, let's bring it back to the Champions Classic real quick, because the second game was great between Kansas and Duke. Duke obviously missing their three stud freshmen, Tatum, Bolden, and Harry Giles, but, you know, still played tough, ultimately fell short against Kansas, but you know, I think the big story was the play of Frank Mason III and Devontae Graham. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what did you see from them? And what was your overall? You stayed for the whole game. I actually ended up leaving at halftime because your boys got to get up early. but why don't you just give us, you know, a breakdown of what you saw in that game, who you liked, and what impact the freshmen will have when they come back for Duke.
Right. So about Kansas real quick, you know, you're talking about Villanova and all these teams. These are teams that have a lot of juniors and seniors in them. And so, you know, it speaks a lot to the fact that these are guys are way more mature than these one-and-done guys are. And Kansas usually, there's guys stick around for, you know, more than a couple years. And so, yeah, that backcourt, man, you know, 21 years old, 20 years old. I mean, you're talking about guys that just can outsmart, you know, their opponents. And so, that's a feisty backcourt right there, man. They're scrappy. They're scrappy. And I think I saw... Graham is like now like a first round like draft pick, like somewhere 27, 28th in some mock drafts. And so, like, again, like that kind of performance at the Garden, like it can change everything, you know. sticking with Kansas real quick, Josh Jackson was in foul trouble, has been getting in foul trouble a lot for the first few games. And so that's something he's going to have to work on, obviously, just a freshman. But he had a big second half. I mean, the first – like right when you left, right at halftime, like those first 10 minutes, he had probably had like 12, 15 points within those first –
No coincidence. I was losing my mind in the first half. In the first like 8 minutes, there were like 17 foul calls. Yeah. I was sitting next to Frank, and I was like, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm going to lose my mind watching this game. But yeah, and then Josh got he got a tech at the end of in the first half, and he kind of sat the last like 6 or 7 minutes. So I was happy to see him come back. But what do you think about like Grayson Allen from Duke? He's up for Player of the Year. I think he got hurt in that game, but played through it.
Yeah.
What's my man's name? Luke Kennard.
Luke.
He's looked good to start the year, man.
That's one of the guys that, like I said, came back for another year, and you know, it's amazing how like 1 year makes a difference. You know, these guys are way smarter. You're forgetting your boy Frank Jackson too.
Come on, son, saving the best for last.
You're forgetting your boy Frank. He hit a 3-pointer with like 3 minutes to go and a foul, 4-point play, and then like the another tie in three with like 8 seconds to go. You know, so he stepped it up in those big time moments. Duke is gonna be interesting. You know, Grayson's kind of this kind of guy. You either like him or you kind of don't. At this point, he's a junior.
Yeah.
So he's 3 years into it. It will be very interesting. You know, I don't know, and especially once you know Tatum comes back and Giles comes back, which
this is the thing. Like with Tatum, it was like, oh, he's like, whatever, minor foot injury. He'll be back in a few weeks. You know, no timeline of when he's going to play again. Giles had knee surgery right before the year started, so he's out probably at least another couple of weeks. But, like, is it feasible that we won't see these guys until ACC play starts?
I think that's very probable.
That's so whack.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing it safe at this point. But it can come back and backfire. I mean, right off the bat, conference play, ACC, this is not like a mid-major conference, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, these guys haven't got any games with, you know, these kind of schools and, you know, under the wing. I mean, it might end up backfiring. That'd be very, very interesting.
And then what do you think, like, Giles is still, like, top five in almost every mock draft.
Right.
I mean, this is a guy, he tore both his ACLs in high school and now hasn't played a game in college. No one knows when we're going to see him on the court. So,
right.
I don't know, you've seen him play way more than I have. So, I mean, if, like, you're an NBA GM looking at this, like, how can you feel comfortable drafting a kid like that?
Right.
That
I mean, there's been a lot of articles, like, you know, with like whatever, you know, unnamed scouts, sources, whatever, saying the same thing that you're expressing. Mm. You know, at this point, all these like
I wrote them all, by the way.
No, you are the source.
Yeah. You are the source. And so it'll be very, dude. I honestly, if I love the kid, I mean, skill wise, you know, it's the skill set is there. But you're talking about, you know, towards ACL sophomore year, once again, senior year, has yet to play college ball. You know, at some point, you know, you're saying to yourself, you know, like, I don't know. And so he will be an interesting one. Tatum, you know, I think with Tatum, the thing more is, you know, he's more of a versatile guy, you know, can play multiple positions. And so with Tatum, you would expect at least, what is he, like top three most mock drafts or so?
Yeah.
I don't see, it doesn't hurt Tatum's, you know, draft stock at all. I think with Giles, you know, it puts him in a position where now he has to, if he comes back, and it's so unfair, but in the first couple of weeks, he looks slow. I mean, you're going to see just like a complete plummeting in mock draft. That's how it works. You know, and you're talking about someone's going to come back straight to conference play. It's going to be super hard, you know? So, like, I would say, I don't want to say the odds are against him, but he has his work cut out whenever he comes back. You know, physically, mentally, I mean, it's going
to
be a lot.
Yeah, he's got a lot to weigh, but I don't know, in like a weird way, like, this Joel Embiid, the way Joel Embiid has turned out might help a kid like Harry Giles a lot. Yeah, Harry? It's Harry Giles, right?
Harry Giles, yeah.
Yeah, all right. For some reason, I thought it was like Henry Giles for a second. I'm getting
all
screwed up
here.
You've
been chugging that Tussin all morning.
I'm going off the Tussin.
We're going to forgive you for that one.
So,
wait, are you going to stop and give us your Grayson Allen fire take?
My
or not?
Take?
Did we already pass by it?
So, no, we didn't pass by it. So, I preface this by saying I like Grayson Allen. I think he's a good player. Seems like a nice enough kid, but enough with the excuses, man. He's a dirty-ass player. And, like, we were watching the three of us were separately, or you, Abe, Adam, and I were separately watching the Duke-Rhode Island game, and they had, like, a 90-second interview with Grayson Allen. And before the ESPN reported, like, Grayson Allen hurt himself in the game against Kansas, but it was nothing compared to what he had to go through last year. And, like, went into this, like, whole dramatic thing about how, you know, he was being labeled as a dirty player. He's not. He's a good kid. I'm like, that's all bullshit, dude. Like, he's a dirt. He plays. All right. He plays hard. He plays scrappy. And occasionally he trips people when they run down the court, man. Like, he does some dirty shit.
This takes so hot. You're gonna hurt yourself. Man. Wait, but
I'm breathing fire out here. So I don't know. I just get annoyed with like the way he's covered.
Yeah, but is that a complete like media creation or
yes.
Does he actually? But I'm saying you can't blame Grayson Allen.
That's what I said. I'm not blaming him.
He just is kind of a dirty player, like kind of in the same way that you know, like a Dellavedova or someone like that. Like,
yeah,
he's scrappy, borderline, probably dirty. But like, it's not like he's like, oh man, everyone hates me. Why? That's like a media created thing, right? That's
what you're talking about. Yeah, and I prefaced it by saying I like him. I like the way he plays, but yes, the way he's covered.
So we're really criticizing the way that he's covered, not Grayson Allen himself.
Yeah, and I think
unless you want to criticize him separately for being a dirty player.
No, I don't. Because I think you need that type of player on your team if you're going to win, and like that falls in line with like the way Duke guys just, you know, are like legendary Duke players. Look at Christian Laettner, you look at I don't want to name all white guys.
I mean,
just so obvious.
But I mean, like, look, as long as you're not like hurting someone, there's space for that kind of dude even on NBA team.
Yes, totally.
Fucking but like, the Reggie Evans of the world or whatever.
To build it up and be like, he had to go through so much. Like he was really, you know.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Put up. And exposed to people who were just blasting him on Twitter. It's like, bro, come on. He's set himself up for that by tripping people when they play. Like, it's clear as day. You know, you need that kind of guy. Coach K, players thrive on that shit.
Do it as long as you can take the heat when it happens. But I'm saying I haven't heard him, like, whining about taking heat or being getting roasted or being on a meme or something.
Right,
I think what you're talking about is just the way that the media has chosen to assume that he feels about going through that.
Correct. Right. So, yes, my qualm is with his media coverage, not so much him as a player at all. I don't know. Frankie, do you have any input on this?
I have no comment.
I don't want to put you on the spot here. But, no, I bang with Grayson.
I will say this, though, like, you know, talking about media coverage or whatever, like, this is his third. He doesn't need to be there anymore. And at some point, it's like he was a lottery pick or whatever. And so I'm wondering if, like, it's probably hurting him at this point in terms of his perception and media perception and so forth. Like, he should have been gone a while ago, and I'm still trying to understand why he's even on campus, but I can assume he's probably enjoying himself and a lot of people.
He's living a pretty good life, man.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. So, I think we got to talk more about what Pete over here is like dying.
Yeah, I'm dying. I'm not doing well. But what do you want to talk
about? Let's go out west real quick. So, you know, obviously we're big fans of the Ball Brothers. And so, you know, Lonzo Ball, dude, I mean, he's literally balling.
Easily the most, well, wait, I don't know. It's between him and Markelle Fultz for who's the most, like, vineable, highlight, real guy so far. Right. Which way would you go with that? I feel like both of them I've been seeing everywhere in terms of, like, flashy dunks, coast to coast, doing crazy shit in practice.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the thing with, you know, I was reading somewhere, Markelle Fultz, they're calling him literally the most, like, improved player since Anthony Davis in terms of, like, that late last couple of years of high school ball, just, like, complete. I mean, he was playing JV 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, JV ball, only played varsity junior year and senior year. And, you know, I think I forget what we had him last year in our high school ranks, but somewhere, like, in the teens or whatever, maybe 10. But now you're talking about the number one pick of the draft.
Yeah.
So it just literally skyrocketed out of nowhere. I will say this, though. Then with Washington, not to like whatever, but some of the schools that are playing are like their non-conference schedule is super weak, though.
Yeah, but they like, got they lost to Washington. Like, I think they lost to Yale in the opening game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
And that's so, and last year we talked about they had two, you know, first round picks, DeJounte Murray, Marquise Chris, and so the fact that, and I don't want to say to dodge anybody, but look, UCLA is going to come and play Kentucky, I believe, next week, December 3rd, December 4th. Which will be a huge, huge game. Lonzo Ball against De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk. But Washington, he had 35 in one game. I believe it was that game against Yale. He had 30 in another one, had like 25 or whatever it is in the third one. And so, I mean, they're great numbers or whatever, but I want to see them play against like top competition at some point.
So, but that might not be till what? Like they play Arizona?
Arizona, UCLA.
Yeah, UCLA. The thing that Lonzo Ball, outside of being unbelievably highlight worthy, is he looks like he's going to be on like a top at least 15 team. Like, TJ Leaf is good. Right. Bryce Alford looks like is playing well. So, you know, they're going to win a lot of games, and they're going to be way high profile. Like, I'm starting to think, like, you know, Lonzo Ball might mess around and work his way up into the to consideration for the number one pick. Like, well, he's electric, dude. Well, like, he is so entertaining.
That's what I'm saying about, like, the vines. Like, he's going to become a superstar off of that.
And it's not just, like, if you look when he plays, like, he always makes the right play. Right. Like, he's super heady. It's not just he's looking for dunks.
I was
and
about
everything.
To say that, too, because someone like a Zach LaVine, who I only think of because of the dunks and same school and everything. But, like, Zach LaVine was a sixth man who was very limited in what he could do. He wasn't, you know, couldn't play the whole game and, like you said, like, have that kind of basketball IQ as a college player, I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, Lonzo's going to lead a team in points, assists. He'll be up there in rebounds. Exactly. So, you know, he's going to be, you know, probably be considered Pac-12 Player of the Year and probably going to work his way into at least the lottery, at the very least.
Right. Well, see, actually, I'm prepared today, so I got some numbers here for you guys. So check this out. So,
whoa.
How dare you?
Whoa.
16.3 points a game and, you know, nine assists. Per game. So he has 16 and 9. He's averaging right now through the first four games. Has already surpassed 11 assists twice. But get a hold of this. He only averages 9 attempts per game. Mm-hmm. So he's doing 16 a game, averaging 9. Wow. Yeah. So he's 5-for-9 from the field. That's his average right now, 5.5-for-9 from the field. But then you compare that to Malik Monk, who's doing 15.8. So you got Malik is averaging, you know, more or less a point less than Lonzo. But Malik averages 13.5 field goal attempts. Mm-hmm. So he's averaging 5 more field goal attempts than Lonzo does, and Lonzo scores more than Malik does.
Wow.
You know, so, exactly. So talk about efficiency. You know, only 9 shots a game, has already surpassed 11 assists twice. He averaged a triple-double in high school. That's the thing. He, you know, Chino Hills, 35-0 last year, number one team in the country, averaged a triple-double. So, I wouldn't be surprised. And I think he's averaging, like, 6 rebounds or 7 rebounds. Four. Yeah, 6-point-something rebounds a game right now. So, he might mess around and average a triple-double. Like,
whoa. That'd be insane, man. He's so fun to watch.
And then he leaves, and then another Ball brother shows up.
Yeah. I think it's LiAngelo going at you. And then LaMelo is the youngest, right?
LaMelo's a sophomore. So, and LaMelo had a sick mixtape this week. And so
there's a chance, like, because Jalen Hands is going there next year, right?
Jalen Hands, Jalen Hills. They're ranked number – UCLA is ranked the third best recruiting class for next year right now.
Yeah, but actually before we dip, I just want to ask you real quick about some high school stuff. You know, actually at the game, at the Champions Classic we were at, we saw Mo Bamba, Nick Richards, and a couple other kids floating through the crowd. So, excuse me. Why don't you you know, just give us an update on some of the top kids. I know my man's – oh, my God, I always forgot his name. DeAndre Ayton?
Ayton.
I always get his name wrong. Is going to Arizona. Michael Porter's going to Washington. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of guys who are uncommitted, including Mo Bamba, including Wendell Carter, who I think is going to commit
– 23rd, tomorrow.
So today's the 22nd. So why don't you just, you know, what are you seeing out of this class? Who do you like? Right. Who's an underrated guy? Where do you see, like, a Mo Bamba going?
Right. So the weird thing about the last couple of weeks, and not only did the college season start, but it was, the early, you know, live signing period, you know. Yeah. So this is the time where kids actually started, you know, putting pen on paper. And so it was so weird for the Calipari's and the Coach K's. Not only were they trying to start their season in the right way, but they were also trying to secure kids to commit to that. So the last couple of weeks were busy for, you know, the likes of Calipari and Coach K. So at this point, you know, Kentucky has 4 of the top 50 already committed. So coming into last week, they had 0 commits. And within a 10-day period, they landed 4 of the top 50 kids.
So they got Richards.
They got Nick Richards, who's a big kid out of New Jersey. He's originally from Jamaica.
Quade Green.
They got Quade Green over the weekend, 6'1 point guard from Philly.
He chose him over Syracuse, right? That was a pretty big surprise, I think.
Those crystal balls that, you know, who knows where they get those things from. But they had them all going to Syracuse. PJ Washington, who's at Philly Prep, also has committed to them, and then Shai Alexander. Mm-hmm. Interestingly though, 4 of the top 50, but no top 10 kid has committed to Kentucky yet.
Right.
So that's pretty interesting. And then when you're looking at who's uncommitted, you got Trevon Duval, who did not put Kentucky in his final five. His final five is Seton Hall, interestingly, Kansas, Duke, Baylor, Arizona. And then you got Wendell Carter, who's committing tomorrow. I don't know when this is going live.
It's going Wednesday, so.
Today?
Today.
And so his best friend, Gary Trent, committed to Duke. He never had Kentucky in his final four. His final four were Georgia Tech, Georgia, Harvard, and Duke. And so expectations are that he'll join his friend at Duke. Mo Bamba has been very, very, you know, quiet about it. There's been no list. He hasn't really said much. But
I won't impress you if you have the inside track. That's your boy.
Bamba, if you remember in the diary, he's very into, you know, business and very into academics and coding. He's learning how to code. Mm-hmm. So he's been stressing so much academics that I have no inside knowledge, by the way. But I would see a Duke or Michigan, those kind of schools that are very, you know, top notch academically. Lanimo. Mo is going to be a late commit, so he's not going to commit to sometime in April or March, in the spring. But yeah, it's a very interesting. Kentucky has, you know, four top 50 kids and none in the top 10. Wendell, it looks like they were not landing him at all. Trevon, not in the list. So they might. Our boy Hammy the Diallo, yeah, who was in this issue, is considered Kentucky. And, you know, we'll see if they can get a top 10 kid. But it sounds like we were talking about this at some point. You know, when is that allure, or when is, you know, Coach Cal sort of like slow down recruiting? And then, I don't know if this might be the year. I don't want no BBN people tweeting at me. I'm not saying that they're not going to be good, but it's just pretty interesting. No top 10 kids. You were talking about UCLA.
Yeah.
You know, so they have the second, whatever rankings they are, they have the second sort of top class as of now going into the winter. And so they just got Chris Wilkes a couple of days ago. You mentioned Jalen Hance, probably, you know, arguably maybe aside from Hamidou Diallo, the most explosive guard in the country.
What about Trey Young from Oklahoma? Where's he gonna end up? That kid can shoot the lights out, man.
Yeah, he's been sort of quiet. I don't know if he's gonna commit early or late. He still has some visits coming in. He was Michael Porter's, who's going to Washington, AAU teammate.
Yeah.
So there's some sort of questions there whether or not he might, you know, join him over there. And no, Washington is in the final list of suitors, so we'll see. But yeah, the cool thing about going back to UCLA real quick. So UCLA has, you know, five commits. Four of them are from in-state, from California.
Yeah.
So they have been able to keep their kids. Jalen Hance, Jalen Hill, Leandro Ball, Cody Riley, which we just featured on Punks a couple of months ago. You know, 6'7", versatile wing. So it'll be pretty interesting to see. I mean, you look at Alabama. Alabama has landed two top 20 kids already.
Wow.
That's Avery Johnson, right? Exactly. And one of the kids, you know, John Petty committed, chose Alabama over Kentucky. It was not Alabama, Kentucky. John Petty's from Alabama, Huntsville, I believe, and opted for Alabama over Kentucky. I mean, the other kid, they got is Colin Sexton, who's from Georgia. And Colin, you know, we thought might stay somewhere in the, you know, southeast area and ended up going to Alabama. So two top 20 kids for them. And, I mean, they're still trying to, you know, scrap some other guys. And so Avery Johnson's doing a unbelievable job in terms of recruiting. Yeah. I mean, he's only been here 3 years, I believe, and has already sort of, you know, picked up a nice.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, one of the biggest, you know, Duke and Kentucky have this insane rivalry, and they never play each other. It's strictly based on who will get the recruit. So it's like low-key such a – it's super intense, but they never, ever play each other.
I was reading a stat somewhere that Kentucky has landed either a number one or number two recruit the last 8 years, and 8 years is the years that Calipari has been at Kentucky. So ever since he moved to Lexington, he's landed either the top class or the second class in the entire country.
That's crazy. Amazing.
And he has a number one class right now, despite the fact that he doesn't have a top 10 kid, which is telling in itself. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think, you know, see Duke landing Wendell, that's two top 10 kids for them. They might overtake Kentucky for number one at some point. But you never know. You never know. Until that, you know, until they sign on the dotted line, it doesn't really
until they step foot on campus.
Or even that.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, now let's get into this interview with my boy Yume Ramos and Fernando Quinones. But nah, Frankie, this is dope. We'll definitely, as the season starts rolling along, we'll definitely have you back in. Probably once conference play starts. Still got a lot of basketball to be played. Abe, always a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Always, man.
Go, hey, Cats.
Everybody have a good holiday.
Yes.
See you on the other side.
All right, y'all. Peace.
Peace, you know what it is. It's your man SKYZOO Skyzoo, live from the borough. I'm up here with the homies at Slam Magazine, and this is the Respect the Game podcast. Let's do it.
All right. We got a packed house in here. Fortunately, I'm with my boy. Don't even worry about the headphones. I'm with my boy Franklin Kaye. Frankie, what's good? Thank you for joining me.
I'm glad to be here. Glad to be here. Subbing in for Ape Squadron.
That's right. And we got a full house, straight from Puerto Rico. We got Yume Ramos, who is the, hold on, I have this written down, the president of the Puerto Rico National Basketball Federation. Yume, how are you?
Fine,
and you? Oh, it's you, Ramos. I'm sorry. My apologies.
It's okay, don't worry.
And then next to him, we got Fernando Quiñones, who is the president of the BSN League in Puerto Rico.
Hello, glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us. And then sitting next to him, we got Rolando Horitiner.
That's right.
Who is here doing some marketing for Puerto Rico basketball. Played on the Puerto Rican national team, correct, in 2004?
From 95 to 2004.
2004. Yeah. So welcome, gentlemen. How's everybody feeling? How's the weather today? How in New York? A little chilly, huh?
It's perfect.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
For what you expected, right? We expected it to be a little bit cooler, but straight.
Yeah, you guys lucked out. You guys are in town doing some promotion for Puerto Rican basketball. So, you know, I guess we'll start with you. Why don't you just tell us about the state of Puerto Rican basketball and your involvement and what you're trying to do? What's the goal of being in New York this week?
Well, we have a couple of meetings with some potential sponsors and with the NBA, so we can reestablish the relation with the NBA and the Puerto Rico Basketball Federation in order to make some things together. Mm-hmm. We want to bring back to Puerto Rico programs like NBA Cares, NBA Without Borders, and it's very important to Puerto Rican basketball to be in touch with the NBA.
Right. And then what's the history of Puerto Rican basketball and the NBA? You know, where does it stand now? You know, obviously players in the NBA played on the Puerto Rican national team. I know Carlos Arroyo had a cup of tea or a cup of coffee in the league, and he played down for the Puerto Rican team. So, you know, what's the relationship been like between the U.S. and Puerto Rico when it comes to basketball?
Well, in the past, it was a really good relation. They were the NBA and the Puerto Rico Basketball Federation. They used to have a direct connection. However, in the last seven to 8 years, it was broke. You know, no relation at all. Mm-hmm. Right now, we are trying to reestablish that. We have right now J.J. Barrera in the NBA. We used to have Carlos Arroyo, Piculín Ortiz, Ramon Rivas, Ramon Ramos, Butch Lee, some of the Puerto Rican players that play in the NBA. So we are trying to. Also, we are right now Mo Harkness, who is mm-hmm. playing for the Portland Trail Blazers, Shabazz Napier, and Devin Booker.
Okay.
So Mo Harkness, he already played football for our team in Puerto Rico. However, he got injured, so he never got to the. He was never got be able to play in the official competition.
Right.
We are in the process to establish a connection and conversation with Shabazz Napier and also with Devin Booker.
Great.
So I'm very curious about this. I have a question about this. So I don't know how good my sources are, but apparently basketball has overtaken baseball in the island as the top sport within the youth. Is that true? And if so, where do you see the game growing in that island?
Basketball is the main sport in Puerto Rico. It's the principal sport. It's the biggest sport in Puerto Rico. Is the one that moves everybody. When the Puerto Rico national team plays in Puerto Rico, it gets packed.
Wow.
Every single time. When we're playing outside of the island, everybody's watching the game on TV, so it's the main sport.
Right. And then how much of that is attributed to, you know, the 2004 team? You know, they had that amazing run, the Olympics. Right? It was the Olympics, correct?
Oh, the Olympics, yeah.
Yeah.
Athens, Greece.
In Athens, and beat Team USA?
Beat Team USA.
So, and then our boy Rolando played in that. so what, you know, how much of that, you know, impacted the next generation of Puerto Rican basketball? Was that, like, the biggest moment in Puerto Rican basketball history, or is there something that we don't know about?
It was a very important moment. However, in the past, we had several important moments like in the 1990 World Championship, we finished in the fourth place in the world. We in 2002 in Indianapolis, we finished like six in the world. So, of course, the victory against the USA team, it was like a highlight, but. Basketball in Puerto Rico, it has been important since 1960, 1970.
Right. And then Fernando, You know, as part of BSN, you know, I did a little research that was, you know, surprised to find out how old the league was. The league started in 1930, and just a few names who have been involved: Phil Jackson, Del Harris, Bernie Bickerstaff, correct?
Tex Winter,
you know.
Rex Holzman.
Yeah, Red Holzman, all these huge, huge names. You know, now you still have former NBA players in the league. You know, Ronaldo Bachman plays. I believe Devin Ebanks is in the league. So, you know, can you just talk about, you know, the prestige of the BSN and you know, how big it is on the island?
Yes, definitely. This is one of the oldest leagues in the world. As you say, it started in 1930 and has been running straight since that time. At the beginning, even, there was no federation. There was just a league until in 1959, Puerto Rico was invited to play in the World Championships in Chile. And actually, it was a funny story because they were competing at, I think it was Central American Games in Venezuela, I think it was. And then they took six players from that tournament who didn't go then to the semifinals and finals, who traveled to Chile. They called for some other players to travel from Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. and they left some players from track and field and volleyball to join the remaining players at the championship that they were playing. And the Puerto Rican point guard, his name was Juan Pachin Vicens, was named the top player in the world in that tournament. So basically, it's a rich history. The league is definitely the top league in the world. Right now, we have 11 teams. More than 700,000 people attend our games
wow.
per year. So it's basically the top sports league, no matter the sport, in Puerto Rico. And as you say, we have top talent going over there. This year, we had more than 10 players who hadn't played in the NBA who went as imports, because each team gets to have two imports from anywhere in the world. And at the time when we play, which is usually late in the spring and during the summer, this is by far the best league playing that is available in the world. I mean, the top leagues in Europe have finished, and you don't have any leagues that compete with us in that time. And people are free, kids are free from school, they can go there. So it's the main draw, the main attraction in Puerto Rican sports.
To follow up on that, so apparently now you guys are deciding that you want to go ahead and see if you can attract some of the top high school prospects from the America and bring them over to Puerto Rico and to do, instead of bypassing college, you'll go do a year there and then head off to the NBA. Speak about that. What are some of the guys, some of the things you guys are doing in terms of efforts to, you know, get that done?
Definitely. We, as I told you, we want to draw the top talent to the league, but not only players who have, for example, played already in the NBA and maybe are trying to get to find their way back, but players who are younger players who in sometimes decide that if college is not for them, they are looking for another league that they could go to. This is the perfect opportunity. Puerto Rico is a commonwealth of the United States. We are part of the United States. So you are playing basically in your same country, your same currency. It's a two-hour flight from Miami, 3.5-hour flight from New York. There are like direct flights like every hour. So we get NBA scouts during the all of our tournaments throughout the season. They are coming and going, so it's a great chance for them to be seen. And we are trying to establish a network that will be able to help these players not only with their game, but also when you're coming out of high school, you need to learn a lot about how you're going to manage your life, your finances, and everything like that. So we want to provide a network that would give them some stability and would help them, for example, set up a retirement account, how to manage their checkbook, how to do things that you need to learn as an adult.
Right.
And basically, if nobody shows you how, then you see all the sad stories that we have of players who mismanage their money. So we want to offer them that, but more than that, this is a style of play that is very similar to the play in the United States in comparison with what you would have in Southern American leagues or European leagues. Last year, for example, we had a couple of two or three NBA referees who went down there. So we had Tony Brown. We had Anthony Jordan, who's been in the league. Mm-hmm. And this year we're expanding on that because we're playing a little bit later, so they'll be able to go there. So they're going to find a lot of similarities, and we think that they're going to be very comfortable playing down there in Puerto Rico. Mm.
Interesting. Yeah, right. And I mean, you're burying the lead here. The weather is beautiful, as you guys are saying on the elevator, 300 days a year. It's 80 and sunny, so that's got to be a huge attraction for players as well. You know, you guys we were talking about it a little bit before, but you know, Butch Lee was a name who kept coming up, and you know, I didn't know much about him before a few days ago. After Franklin told me you guys were coming up, I did a little research, and you know, he was born in Puerto Rico. His family moved to New York. He played high school ball in the Bronx. Went out to Marquette. Went to the Final Four.
They won.
Won the national championship at Marquette, and then went on to the NBA. Ended up winning a title with the Lakers.
Yes,
they beat Philadelphia. You know, can you guys? I guess Fernando, can you just speak on Butch's legacy in Puerto Rico? And did he play in BSN as well?
Yes. Yeah. I can, and actually, it's personal for me because he played at my hometown.
Oh wow!
I am from San Germán, which is in the southwest part of the island. It's one of the only original teams still left from 1930, and the team that has won like 14 championships throughout its history. And it had been a drought of more than 40 years since San Germán had won a championship. And in 1985, Butch Lee went to the BSN to play for San Germán Athletics, and they were the underdogs. But with him, they turned everything around. Mm-hmm. And with a young Jose Ortiz, and when I say young, he was really young before college. And basically, the level of play that he brought to the league changed what would be then the norm for the next point guards that went into the league. I can say, for example, that then when you have like a James Carter that went into the league and did that for a lot of years, Butch was there for a short time because he went after he finished in the NBA. But his legacy is still huge, and I mean, everybody knows Butch. And he stayed involved with the league. Mm-hmm. After that, he was general manager for a team. He was a coach for a team. And for a while, he even owned a team down there in Puerto Rico. Right now, he works with some teams in terms of marketing with his company. So he's always involved, and he's also coaching. And Jim can go more into this because I'm sure he knows more than about this. But I think he's coaching youth right now, and his kids are playing, right? His kids are playing, yeah, that's right. He's involved in the youth programs. He's going to be recruited by the Federation to work in the youth national program that we started the tryouts in Puerto Rico. So he's going to be part when they move the tryouts to the metropolitan area. He's going to be involved in that.
Yeah, and speaking of those youth, the youth development, you know, one of the biggest reasons the U.S. has been so far ahead when it comes to basketball is because the youth programs are far more advanced than in the rest of the world. So, you know, obviously that has to do a lot with economics and coaching and this, that, and the third. But, you know, for a sport that has overtaken baseball in Puerto Rico, has there been more of a focus on developing youth players in the Commonwealth?
Right now, we are establishing the structure to turn the youth programs into a development program, not to be a competitive programs. In Puerto Rico, there are around 200 clubs that they play the minor leagues, like from 6 years until 14 years old. And we're trying to turn that into a development program, not that competition, because the kids are getting affected for the amount of games they're playing. You know, parents yelling at the kids, the coaches cannot handle the stress. They need to learn how to teach, not to win.
Right.
In Puerto Rico right now, we are establishing like a referee school, a coach school. We already make a deal with one of the Puerto Rico biggest university for the psychological treatment to turn the basketball into a development and recreational thing, not that competition.
Right. I think our guy Todd Washington was saying that there might be a youth academy in the works. Speak about that.
Well, yeah, the thing is, as you was saying and you were talking about earlier. We had for many years the benefit, and this is one of the things that we were here and Fernando was talking about the league. We had the benefit, like myself, that I could play the minor leagues in Puerto Rico and then go to college in the States like I did, and then go back and play in the league. Mm-hmm. Back then I could. I started in 1992. And I went to college in Charleston, South Carolina, in NCAA. So, but in the summer, I would go and play in the league, which was a semi-pro league, and then I would get the benefit of playing there and having that type of experience with those men, right? And then go back to college. And it helped us be, you know, have one of the top teams when we're in the 19 and under, because we had that. And after 2003, right, that was when the rule changed in NCAA. Guys stopped playing. And they couldn't play anymore. They had to go to college and go the same way. But still, there's a few options that we have to try to consider. And I think NCAA allows with few options that we could do something about it. But right now, as you're going back to your question, the academy is something that we need to focus in. We want to focus, and we want to see how the NBA can put their foot in there and get involved. Because for many years, we have been having to send kids to the States. Like right now, the Federation sent this kid, Andre Curbelo, mm-hmm. to school here in New York, and he's 15 years old. He was one of the top teams in a Central American tournament that we had in Puerto Rico, hosted a few months ago. And we want to make sure that we can do that and develop that type of program in our island. You know, with we have the knowledge, we have the talent in coaches. We just need the facilities, a little bit of improvement in facilities and all that equipment that most of the schools here in the States have. So we don't have to export the kids. We can keep them. And at the same time, it's a great destination, like Fernando was saying, for Christmas tournaments and all that. Teams and high schools want to go down there. So recruiting is, I bet coaches would love to go down to Puerto Rico and recruit better than to go to a cold place. So, you know, we have a good option to keep developing and make sure we get kids like the ones, like for example, Jose Alvarado going to Georgia Tech.
Right.
That's one of the kids in the pipeline that we want to make sure we get him in the pipeline, we get him in there and start holding the flag as soon as possible so he can really identify with our program. So it's going to be a big effort in trying to develop, and I think deals with our brands like Nike and establishing the relationship again with the NBA and other sponsors that might come along will help us keep developing the next JJs, the next Carlos, and all that.
Yeah, and then this is my last question. You mentioned JJ, probably one of, if not the most successful player from Puerto Rico as far as in terms of playing in the States. And he did a similar thing to you as well, where he would play while he was at Northeastern, he would play in the BSN during the summers, correct?
Yeah, he did for a while before the rule changed. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, and then can you guys just talk about his impact on the island and his style of play? Does he give back to the community? Is he present there?
Yeah, he's very involved. He has a foundation. He's involved with mostly fixing outside courts, you know, in the neighborhoods and all that. Schools, working out with the schools of the public system. And he has house there. He goes all the time. And JJ is one of those examples of a kid with a lot of talent, a lot of heart, a lot of passion, and that at 14 years old, 15, we saw it. We said, you need to go. You need to go to the States and showcase yourself. And but he's been very well involved. He's always said that he's ready to represent Puerto Rico in every competition that he could be there. He's been there, and he plans to keep on playing with the national team. And I think this wave of players since Carlos, he's the original, I would say the original guy, you know, bearing the flag of Puerto Rico in the NBA. And it kind of like you were saying, not that the 2004 win over the U.S., it was the one that made the change, but Puerto Rico basketball was already on top of sports in Puerto Rico back then. It's one of the, you know, basketball, boxing, baseball, the three Bs, that's what we call. But JJ and Carlos were the ones that, you know, with the whole internet, the social media and all that, keeps pushing the sport to keep growing and growing, and kids just love to play basketball. And JJ has been a huge, huge part of that. Obviously, when he won the championship with the Dallas Mavs, it was great.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you coming out to the office. If there's anything we can do to help, please don't be shy in asking. And best of luck to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.